We usually start this program by taking you somewhere else, painting a picture with words and sounds outside the studio. But today, right here in the studios of KCUR is exactly the scene we want to set, the place we want to start. Almost every day for 15 years, KCUR's afternoon newscaster came into these studios, juggling stories coming from our reporters, from the city council hearings he covered, the breaking news he picked up from newspapers and TV stations and websites and Twitter, the updates from the state houses, and somehow, as you drove home or made dinner, he took it and made it into a minute and 39 seconds of gold, distilling it to its essence and weaving it together into something seamless.
The Missouri House this afternoon passed a bill altering the state's deadly force laws. It expands the state's stand your ground law. As the nation ponders the tragedy in Orlando, a leading advocate for reducing gun violence made a case today. The deal calls for a base salary of $225,000 a year, plus a district-issued car, moving expenses, and a retention bonus if he stays the entire 3 years. Bedell is set to start July 1st. The entire contract has yet to be released.
Today on KCUR Central Standard, we remember a newsman and friend, Steve Bell. He died last week at the age of 77 after a lifetime of radio and a lifetime. I'm Brian Ellison. If you knew Steve, we welcome your memories, too. We'll take some of your calls and thoughts a little later in the program. But joining us in the studio now are two of Steve's friends, David Knisley and Dave Cox. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're glad you're here. David Knisley, how and when did you first meet Steve?
I met Steve back in 1985. I was working for Yellow Freight System at that time. And we developed a educational training department and did videos and putting videos together. And naturally, we needed a narrator. Mr. Charlie Wellborn, a friend of mine that worked at Sprint at the time, met Steve Bell back in the 70s and introduced me to Steve. And that's when we became friends. So I've known Steve for 31 years, and I retired from Yellow Freight System in 2008, started my own company doing educational training and informational videos, and Steve was part of that.
Yeah, that was a voice you wanted to put to work.
That was the voice I put to work. That was the writer I put to work, and it was also the actor I put to work.
What did he do in terms of acting for you?
We would do sales training videos, and he would play a sales manager and is working with a new hire. And, of course, he had that distinguished sales look anyway. He was quite profound, and he could pick up any character role that you wanted to give him. Steve was right on the spot.
I think for folks who only know him in that serious newscasting role, they may not know that that smiling, a little more easygoing, freewheeling side of Steve.
Exactly. And I put on my Facebook page that I was going to be doing this because, you know, Yellow Freight System was at one time was worldwide, but we're all over North America, and there's a lot of people that are sitting out there because Steve probably did well over 100 training and informational videos for us, and all they heard was his voice. And so I put it out that this is going to be, and you got a podcast and you got a live stream going, so I know that there's a lot of people out there that's going to say, I recognize that voice. I know who that is.
I know you actually lived fairly close to Steve as well, right?
I did, yes. We live in the Redbridge area.
What was he like as a guy in the neighborhood?
You know, he and I had a lot in common, especially dogs, animals, and Labrador retrievers, and Steve was more religiously inclined to walk and train with his dog than I was, because I always relied on the kids when they were there, and now they're gone, and it just seems like I didn't have the time. I traveled a lot, but Steve was quite the character.
Yeah,
believe it or not, he always would come across sincere, and was sincere, but he could be quite the character.
Want to hear more about the character that he was, and of course we heard here at the station about his love of his dogs from time to time as well. Dave Cox, one of the things that you had in common with Steve was a love of music, I understand.
Yeah.
What kind of music?
Well, with him it was just about anything, but as I mentioned to you when we talked before, I had never heard anyone attempt to play Malagueña on a banjo.
Which is a guitar piece, right?
Yeah, and a difficult one at that. But he not only attempted, but he did it, and I heard him play it at least twice.
You know, I think flat picking the banjo is one of his musical talents, but also singing, right?
Yeah, he had a nice voice. It was a marginal solo, you would say.
Would he agree with that assessment?
Probably.
All right, fair enough.
But we sang together in a choir, and he had a marvelous bass range and baritone at that. He could go high, but he was wonderful.
The voice, the bass baritone part is something that's not hard to imagine, for sure. In fact, Steve was in radio in one way or another since he was 19. But it, one thing a lot of folks don't know is that in 1983, he actually earned a PhD in counseling, psychology, from UMKC. What was that all about? Why did he go get a degree in psychology? You guys knew him.
Well, he needed something to do, I guess. KCUR couldn't find enough for him to do, so he went after that. But
that was before his KCUR days.
Yeah, he wanted to. I don't know. He had an interest in psychology, and that was his way of expressing it.
Was he the kind of person you think people would talk to, Dave Nisely?
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I know when we were on the set at one time, and a guy sitting next to me, I mentioned that Steve Bell was a doctor in psychology. And the guy says, "That's what it is." And I said, "What do you mean that's what it is?" He said, "I always get the feeling he's analyzing me." I said, "He probably is, but he's not judging you."
No, it's in a good way, right?
Right.
Dave Cox, what's a picture that you carry around in your head of Steve that what's a way you'll remember him for a long time to come?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things that come to mind, starting with the broadcasting, of course, which was his first love and lasting love. Mm-hmm. I still remember when he recruited me for a couple of Dave Nisely's training films.
Oh, you got to an acting turn as well.
Yeah, if you want to call it that. But he was marvelous at that, and he at one point in his life he became a puppet master.
Really?
He made and used puppets for various things, and they were great. They were very much like the Muppets, and he put them to work.
I'm somehow not surprised that, and it probably gave him quite the characters too.
That's right.
What's an image that you'll carry around with you a bit of Steve?
I tried to make Steve was never one for practical jokes, or he was always serious, and I guess I think about the times that we traveled, and Steve always had would always call the front desk and say, I need a wake-up call for X number of time. And I told Steve one time, we were talking, and I said, "Steve, why do you do that? You got an alarm sitting right there in your bedroom. Why don't you just go ahead and set it?" "Oh, well, I set it too." So we were out in at one place one time, and he said, "Well, I've got a wake-up call for 6:30. Well, I would invariably call Steve about 10 after 6. And in typical Steve fashion, he wakes up, picks up the phone, and all you hear him say is, "Thank you," in his radio voice, like he'd been up all night, and just hangs up. And this went on for several months. I would do this. And there's a long story that leads up to that, that he thought he almost got us kicked out of a hotel one time, but
you got to tell us.
You want it?
Well, tell us the short version.
I'll do that. I happened to mention to one of the employees, one of the directors at Yellow, that we were going to be out in Orange County doing a videotaping scene. He said, "Where are you staying?" And I said, "Well, we'll be in Buena Park at the Granada Royale." So at 5 o'clock in the morning, my phone rings. Steve Bell says, "We're getting kicked out of the hotel." I said, "What do you mean we're getting kicked out of the hotel?" And so he proceeds to tell me that he got a wake-up call. And so he said he didn't need a wake-up call, but there's somebody in the hotel that actually probably had a meeting that they need to go to, and they've called the wrong room. So he's calling the guy, and the guy said, "Well, a woman called and said, need to give you a wake-up call." Well, he thought it was Lenora, his wife. So he calls Lenora, wakes her up, and she proceeds to tell him what for. And so he calls the guy back, worried about there was somebody in that hotel that had a meeting that they needed to go to, and they're not calling the right room. And one thing led to another, and they got into a verbal dispute, and the guy threatened to call the police on Steve. And then I put two and two together. I knew what happened. Somebody in Kansas City, 2 hour time frame difference, had called and gave Steve a wake up call. So about a month later, I told Steve about this, and he laughed. He got a kick out of it, and he'd talk about it all the time.
Well, Steve did like to talk, and you mentioned all the places that he found community. He found people to support him, his coworkers like you, and his wife Lenora, 56 years. He had 5 grandchildren, 6 great grandchildren, his son Stephen, of course. But another place that Steve found community was at the Winfield Music Festival, the Walnut Valley Music Festival out in Winfield, Kansas. Mm-hmm. Every year. It was a place he would go. He'd be gone for days. We're going to hear one of Steve's feature stories, and he didn't do these all that often, but back in 2012, he told the story of Winfield as it was about to have its 40th anniversary. And I remember when this piece aired, we all knew how much the festival meant to Steve. He prepared the report like the pro that he was, but you can hear his love for the place in here. Let's take a listen.
In 1972, some folks in South Central Kansas founded a national championship for this kind of music, bluegrass-style guitar flat picking. This first place performance was recorded 3 years later by a young public radio reporter named Patty Cahill. The champion that year was a 14-year-old from Colorado by the name of Mark O'Connor. He won the guitar contest and the old-time fiddle contest twice while he was in high school, and has since won 7 Country Music Association awards and 2 Grammys. Patty Cahill is now the general manager of KCUR, and the Winfield Festival turns 40 September 13th. In the early days, most of the music sounded like this. Musical offerings have broadened over the years and now include folk, cowboy, Celtic, even a little jazz and new age, and the word bluegrass has been dropped from the festival's name. Kansas weather extremes have been a challenge some years, including a near miss by a tornado last year. But the toughest year wasn't because of a storm or flood. In 2001, the festival got underway the day after the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
People were just not responding because they were numbed by what had happened, and I don't think they felt that it was right that they enjoy themselves.
Famous solo guitarist Tommy Emmanuel, who got those reports from his friends, fellow musicians, and Winfield campers.
I was stuck in England. I couldn't get a plane out, and it was like living in the twilight zone. I was stuck in my own house and couldn't get to where I really wanted to come and play.
Winfield performers rallied to boost the audience's 9/11 wounded spirits with patriotic and inspirational songs. Some were composed on the spot at the festival.
Follow the light when you're lonely and lost.
As was this one by folk singers John McCutcheon, Tom Chapin, and Michael Mark. McCutcheon's inspiration was a hand-lettered sign in a telecast of a Manhattan prayer vigil.
There's a hole in our skyline. There's a hole in our town. There's a hole in our heart. The whole world around.
McCutcheon holds the record for the most appearances at Winfield almost every year since 1983.
I've gotten to know entire families. I've seen people fall in love in court and get married and have kids, and those kids have kids now. And I've put people in the ground there. And so it really feels like a community that happens one weekend a year, and it's just a really special place.
The Wilders, a Kansas City band that has played the festival 10 times and recently toured Europe, actually got started by jamming on the Winfield campgrounds. Lead singer Ike Sheldon says for some, those campgrounds are the festival.
I know people who've gone to Winfield for like 20 years who have never seen a show on stage. And are like, well, why would they go? It's like, because the best music's in the campground. You go around looking at jams, you'll find stuff that you're like, how can these people not be famous? Like, these people don't even know each other. They just met.
Australian-born Tommy Emmanuel says Winfield makes him feel at home as a musician and as a person.
But I love the Winfield atmosphere. I love the fact that you can walk around and talk to all the campers and you can join in jams, all that kind of stuff. It's just really good. I'm hoping that John McCutcheon will be there. I'm hoping that Stephen Bennett will be there, that we can play some duets together.
Guitarist Stephen Bennett, who helped Emmanuel land his first Winfield gig 11 years ago, says the clue to Walnut Valley's success is that it provides something we don't even find in our own neighborhoods.
There's a sense of community that gets forged here, and that, you know, we don't get enough community in our lives.
Community. The area we camp in will have a covered common area this year. A camping neighbor by the name of Jim Skinner created it, so if it rains, there'll be a place to hold conversations and play music together. Steve Bell, KCUR News.
That was KCUR's Steve Bell with an award-winning story, won an award from the Public Radio News Directors about the Walnut Valley Music Festival in Winfield back in 2012. Steve attended that festival almost every year. He died last week at the age of 77. We're going to take a break, but in a minute we'll continue remembering the life of our friend Steve Bell with some of his friends, and we'll talk a bit more about the work he did in broadcasting years ago and right here at KCUR. Some of his longtime colleagues will be here, and we hope you'll be here too. It's KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today we're remembering the life of Steve Bell. He died doing what he loved, preparing the newscast last Monday here at KCUR. We're remembering his work and some of the rest of what he loved. We want you to remember with us. So if you knew Steve or you just knew him from our airwaves and have a memory to share, give us a call at 816-235-2888. Let us share it too. Frank Morris is here. He's a reporter and veteran newsman himself here at KCUR.
Brian.
Welcome,
good to
Frank.
Be here.
Back in the day, you were the news director when Steve was hired. This was a smaller shop back then. Steve became a big part of it very quickly. How'd you end up hiring him?
I became news director. I was news director of myself and half of Laura Spencer's time, and we had gaps, and so we went looking for people. We got, I think, 6 applicants, and 4 of them were horrible. Just, you know, what's your qualification? People tell me I have a nice voice, kind of stuff. Well, and Steve popped way out of the pack, and he'd started radio stations, he'd been a newsman all over the place, he presented himself, you know, super professionally when he came in, very, very slick, and then I called his references. I was really excited. I mean, this is like a dream come true to be able to hire a guy with his kind of gravitas, you know, to be the anchor of your afternoon newscast. So I called a bunch of people. I remember talking to Pam Whiting, among other folks, and everybody told me, you know, this guy is a true professional. He is someone who is completely reliable. However, he does talk a lot, and you know, and this was kind of a refrain with people, and so when I got Steve back on the phone, and this was a way back when Up to Date was a once a week show that because I was
you were hosting and producing
I was hosting and producing, and I was trying to get ready for the, and I just wanted to talk to Steve really quickly, tell him, look, I think this everybody said, however, you know, everything looks good. I just want to run this one thing by you. People say you talk a lot. And I told him that. And then for the next, it was at least 15 minutes. I remember watching the hand on the clock just creep down. And I was trying to get ready for the show. And Steve proceeded to tell me that, well, you know, he may have at one time talked, not really talked a lot. But and then he's found these he realized the reasons for this were fivefold, and proceeded to list, and then he told me the strategies that and so in conclusion, and I'm starting to stay at you know really at like 5 minute intervals, I would try to cut Steve no. Actually, everything. This is
right. This is an entirely believable story, Frank.
Yeah. Well, and I hung up the phone, and I just went, oh, "Wow, okay, you know."
Yeah.
But you know,
you hired him.
Of course. I mean, his qualifications were, you know, enormous, and even you know even that story even when Steve was explaining and this is you know I think a hallmark of Steve's. Monologues they were very well constructed, just like right. his newscast. He had these things in a logical order. It wasn't a ramble. It was a on the fly essay that he was presenting about a given topic. So it was impressive, even in that moment.
Well, you mentioned his writing and sort of his ability to tell a story with the things he wrote. I want to bring in another guest, and that's Gina Kaufman, who, of course, is now the regular host of this program. But she knew him even before that when she was co-host of The Walt Bodine Show. And Gina joins us by phone this morning from her home, where she is about halfway through her parental leave. Gina, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. I'm so glad to be back. I wish it were under different circumstances, but yeah, thanks.
It's great to hear your voice. You knew Steve, and you got to observe his work for many years. What was he like as a writer and as a storyteller?
Well, as a writer, I would just say that Steve combined efficiency and creativity in a way that I think is rare. I mean, a lot of us, I think, fall into the trap of believing that you have to choose between those things. And in broadcasting, efficiency is crucial, a little less crucial in an hour-long format, but in the newscast, certainly crucial. But Steve had a way of making those two things really work together. I remember one time being in my car and hearing him. I wish I remember what the news items of that day were, but what I remember is that he referred to them as a 1-2 punch in Kansas City's future economy. And, you know, he was under no obligation to frame separate news stories together to kind of tell a story of the day in Kansas City. But when he could, he very kind of quickly did that. He set up some sort of frame like, you know, like that one. And that example, if you just think about that, how much longer it would take to say, there were two events that happened today that we'll be paying for in this city for a long time to come. I mean, Kansas City got a 1-2 punch in the future economy. Bam. And it's clever. I mean, yeah, there's a real mastery of language there.
Yeah, Frank Morris?
Well, Steve was, I mean, this is a hallmark of Steve. His newscasts, he put so much effort into those things. They were never good enough. He was working on them right up, and any of the announcers will tell you, he's working on that newscast right up until the very, very end.
The very end.
Yes, because he never knows, you know, you never know what else you can put in there or how it can be improved. And Steve won a Public Radio News Director's Award for work he did in 2011 or 2001 on 9/11 or the day after 9/11 for a newscast he put together. You imagine there's some pretty good newscasts in there. Steve got second place for Public Radio News Directors for a newscast that he did that exemplified exactly this thing, where it was mainly about a memorial service, but it wove, as you, I like the way you put it in the intro, Brian, he wove these stories together, and he did it with a kind of craft that is almost subliminal. Like you don't know that you've just been handed a finely crafted, streamlined package with a literary arc in this short newscast that weaves these stories together. They're not separate stories; they're woven together. And Steve did that, tried to do that all the time. He called it cramming 5 pounds of excrement into 10 pounds of excrement into a 5-pound bag. He'd say excrement, of course. But I mean, he was very proud of that. He would say, "Well, yeah, it was 10 pounds of in a 5-pound bag."
That was the art of it.
That was a big part of Steve's craft, and that was something that Steve Bell can do better than anybody I've ever known in this industry.
Gina?
I agree with that totally, and I would also say that Frank mentioned that there was like a subtlety in the craft, I think, and it's true that I think one of his great skills is that he made it seem effortless. Everything that he said really flowed. People talk about his voice. Part of the effect that his voice has is that he knew how to write for his voice. Every sentence he uttered had a cadence to it that was so natural and really like as Melis Lewis as the vocal cords themselves. So everything that you heard in his voice sounded so natural that you never felt jarred out of it. You were really able to focus on the content of what he was saying because he was such an artist and craftsman when it came to both writing and voicing and marrying those two together.
Well, Steve was using his voice on the radio actually long before he came to KCUR, but not always as a journalist. Back in 2009, Steve Bell was one of the guests on the Walt Bodine Show, which Gina was co-hosting then. It was a show about advertising jingles. Earlier in his career, Steve wrote and, in fact, sometimes voiced some of those jingles, and well, he talks about that in this clip we have from 2009 on the Walt Bodine Show.
Just now joining us in the studio for a brief portion of the show, we have Steve Bell, our very own reporter who you hear on evening newscasts doing serious business. Little did you know about an earlier point in his career. Steve, could you tell us about your earlier career?
Yeah, I do have an insight into that last thing you talked about, the standard home improvement jingle.
Yeah.
There's a fellow here in town, his name is Bob Merrill, and he's an old-time advertising guy, and he produced that jingle so long ago, back in the 1950s, I guess, and claims that he's the one that sang boom, 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 and
wow,
on the jingle. But you see, he gets nothing from it because of the way things worked in those days. There was a difference between the AFTRA union, that is the union of the announcers,
yeah,
and the station people, and the musicians' union. And the musicians' union, under which I did whatever jingles I did, you got paid a session fee and whatever else came with it, and it was a one-time thing, and you were, yeah, gone. But, yes, I did quite a number of jingles, some of them that aired. Some of them were demos to persuade the client on the behalf of the advertising agency to go to a bigger town like Los Angeles or Chicago or Nashville and hire big-time musicians. And it all started when I was at KCMO Television in 1960, I believe, when we had a program director named Harry Francis, and one of the sales guys was trying to sell some time to the H.D. Lee Company, the people that make the jeans and things.
Yeah.
They had not done television, and this individual got the idea that they could sell them a spot for their new casual clothes, which they called leisures, things that we, nowadays, if there's a trade name goes with them, maybe Dockers goes more with it. But, you know, the casual khaki pants and jackets kind of things. And they also came in bright colors, et cetera. They were appealing to the younger crowd. And in those days, the folk song craze was on, and the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Hootenanny on television. And it happened I was a college folk singer. And so they approached me, and I joined the Musicians Union, and we recorded a jingle written by this production guy. And we recorded it, I think, at Ed Roach's studio, Crown Recording. It might have been at Vic Damon, is it, one of the downtown recording studios.
Yeah.
Just me and my banjo. And then we lip-synced it and did it with a cast of models, et cetera, in Penn Valley Park up by the Scout statue.
Yeah.
And it was a black and white commercial.
Wow.
Before color. That was my first jingle.
Well, we are going to give Steve Bell's first jingle for Leisures a listen right now.
Leisures on the leisure on the trimmest of all leisure. I must have the leisure and leisure. They'll bend and stretch and wash forever. I'm pressing almost never leisure.
Steve, how does it feel to you to hear that these years later?
I got a lot better later on. It was okay. He was a young guy. I was, what, 20 years old or so, and with my banjo, college folk singer. I was a pretty good banjo picker, wasn't I?
I would say.
And, and it got me kind of started. Then, you know, over the years, there would be advertising agency people, one in particular, my old buddy, Holland Dutch Harpool, who was with the Bruce Spree Brewer Company.
Oh, yes.
But there were others who would call me up and say, hey, we got a jingle thing to do. And... you know, I matured and I got better, and some of them got on the air, and some of them were taken, as I say, to persuade the client to spend some really big money to get some full ensemble production. But most of those were done in situations, they were agricultural products, weed killers, various things that you use on the farm.
Steve, I did notice that a number of the jingles you did were for agricultural products, and there is a line in one of your jingles that I... wish that we could play right now, but we aren't going to be able to. But I do want to bring up this jingle. It starts with the line, wild oats are lurking in your fields.
Dutch wrote that. Let me say, first of all, he would hire me to do me. And then I had this deep voice, and he said, can you sound kind of like Johnny Cash? And I said, hello, I'm Johnny Cash. And, he said, let's go for it. So some of these, we did a kind of a Johnny Cash quasi-impersonation. I would never stoop to completely doing the imitation thing.
Yeah.
But this particular one was in a minor key, and it comes on with this rather sinister or suspenseful kind of chord music riff with the guitar, and I think it was a 12-string guitar. And then my voice comes in and the Johnny Cash thing with the echo, and he sings, wild oats are lurking in your fields.
That's pretty funny.
Then, when they show, you know, it's time to stop them before they hurt your yields. And it was for a product called Carbine. And we had a lot of fun with it. And it was an ego thing, I think. All those of us who played music when we were young and were professionals at it when we were young.
Yeah.
We like to feel that we can still walk into the studio and somebody's pay us to do it and we're good enough to do it, you know?
Yeah.
That was KCUR's Steve Bell talking about writing and playing in and singing advertising jingles on The Walt Bodine Show, back with Walt and Gina Kaufman back in 2009. Gina, you have any other memories that will really stick with you as you reflect on Steve's life?
Oh, so many. And it's crazy, actually, to listen back to a conversation with two people who I really admired personally and professionally who are both no longer with us. And I guess I would just quickly want to say that Steve, I worked on a documentary about Walt and interviewed Steve for that. And Steve had been a reporter at a station where Walt was news director and had told a story about coming to Walt with something from the AP about a car crash, saying, should we do a story on this? And Walt said, no, that's boring. Like, we shouldn't do stories about things like that. And if we did, we would write it this way. And he kind of went into this long thing where he said, you know, this morning at dawn, as the sun came up, one car was going up a hill, cresting the horizon. Little did the driver know that on the other side of the hill was a truck. Bang, bodies. And, Steve said that he had been writing his copy that way ever since, but also said that Walt had denied ever saying such a thing. So we'll never know if that homage, you know, it was, we'll never know which way it was, but I think probably Steve would not have invented that story. Walt had such a long career that I could see a moment like that going unnoticed by him. But anyway, yeah, speaking of Steve's writing story and that relationship, I guess the only other thing I would say is that when I first met Steve, it was because he had come to a storytelling event I was doing. I didn't know him, and I was a totally unknown quantity in town myself. I wrote for The Pitch, but I had a pretty small byline in there. I was a young journalist, and he had come, and I could hear the news voice out in the audience because he had a pretty booming voice, even when he wasn't really trying to project. And I heard someone out in the crowd in a very recognizable voice say, which one of these people is Gina Kaufman? And after the show, he came up and introduced himself to me and told me that he had noticed an issue of The Pitch where I had written three stories, three separate stories. And he just wanted me to know what a hardworking journalist he thought I was. And not that I wasn't hardworking, but it might have made me look better than I was that they happened to just be published in the same issue. But that he had noticed me says a couple of, and bothered to come, first of all, was incredibly generous on his part. I mean, it meant a lot to me that someone who was known to me knew who I was and thought of the work that I was doing as significant when I'm not even sure that I could see it that way at the time. And secondly, it says about him how thorough he was in his consumption of local news and his interest in journalism generally, not just his own journalism. You know, he was interested in journalism and local journalism and what was happening in this city. And he dug deep. You really had to be noticing my byline at that time, you know, and it, so he was also just a great nurturer of young journalists and kept up with the times in a way that I think was impressive for someone at his stage, even taking an interest in the fashion tendencies of the younger journalists in the newsroom and busting out some old shoes from his closet that he realized had come back in style.
That is very much who he was. That's KCUR's Gina Kaufman. She is the host of this program, Central Standard, and she'll be back in a couple of months. Gina, thanks so much for taking a few minutes with us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Frank Morris will stick around with us through into our next segment, but for now, we need to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear some of your memories of Steve Bell on the air or off. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. It's 235-2888 if you have particular things you'll miss about that voice and the person behind it. I'm Brian Ellison, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back.
Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire.
We're talking today on Central Standard about the life and the work of Steve Bell, KCUR's longtime afternoon newscaster, who died last Monday at the age of 77. Steve had a life, of course, before KCUR and before journalism. He was an activist for many social justice causes, too, and active in his church and his community. One of the people he met early on in that work, but whose path he would cross again here at KCUR, was Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. Congressman Cleaver's in Philadelphia getting ready to speak at the Democratic National Convention right now, but he took a few minutes yesterday to tell us about what he learned from Steve Bell.
Well, actually, Steve Bell and I went back years. He was kind of an activist early on. Then I lost track of him after a while. And when I was fortunate enough to do Under the Clock with KCUR, we reunited because I had no experience to do radio or anything else in media for that matter. I would always try to ask him to give me his suggestions on the way I use my voice, because I believe that Steve Bell was given this unbelievably fantastic voice as a gift from God. While there was nothing I could do to sound like him, I wanted to find out if there were things I could do to help me project. And you know, he would give me tips. He said, for example, sometimes you, meaning me, will not finish the word. And he said, that's one of the keys in always finishing the word, you know. And I recognize that I do that sometimes still. I actually have great appreciation for him and fond memories.
That was Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, one of many today remembering Steve Bell, who died last week. We're here with two of his friends, David Nisley and Dave Cox, and also KCUR's Frank Morris. There are lots of folks who worked with Steve over the years, including one who has called in from New York City. This is Matt Hackworth, who was a reporter hired around the same time as Steve and worked with him many years here. Matt, good to have you back on the air at KCUR.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be with you. And I'm actually in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you're in New York. But you're in Washington, D.C., rather. Very good. So what do you remember about Steve Bell?
You know, I joined the staff of KCUR shortly after Steve back in the year 2000. And I had been a print journalist primarily up until that point. And I remember one day I had to fill in for a newscast for Steve. And I I don't know, it's kind of like acting as Moses after Charlton Heston. You know, I mean, they were very big shoes to fill. And it came time for the moment, and I flubbed something in the cast. Well, I happened to see Steve later that night, and I apologized to him and said, you know, hey, Steve, I'm really sorry I messed this up. And he looked at me, and he said, you know, Walt Bodine always said, radio is a humbling business. And I said, yeah, you got that right. Now, but Steve always had a story for everything, every kind of circumstance or situation. Yep. It's one of the things I loved most about the guy is that he could take these stories and relate to you. And in Steve's way, he really was trying to put me at ease. And he told me about a time back, I think it might have been the early 60s, when he was working in news, and I believe it was at WDAF, a country station at the time. And he was doing the top of the hour news, and he was sitting at the console there in the studio, and he was going to have to come out of the song and tag the song with a sponsor and then launch into his newscast. Well, Steve's telling me this story that he was coming out of the song, he put the headphones on, and he goes live with his mic, and he says, that song, Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire, brought to you by, and then he's scrambling for paper. He picks up the page and says, Ring of Fire, brought to you by Tux Medicated Pads. And he lost it and had to dump the cart and go to something recorded. And he said, it happens to all of us. At that point, as a young journalist and broadcaster, it totally put me at ease, and it reminded me that this is very much a human business. And I think Steve and the way he could relate to people through his storytelling really, really helped put me at ease.
That story makes me glad we have neither advertising nor music here at KZUR. Matt Hackworth, thank you so much for sharing one of your memories.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
See you, Matt.
Frank Morris hired Matt too.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as you guys hear these stories, do they resonate with the Steve you knew? Is there a part of it that that we just didn't get to know from the short time that he was on the air each day?
Yes.
Dave Cox.
Yeah. For example, it was really hard to shut him up once he got rolling.
And you say that lovingly, of course.
Of course, because I didn't have to be with him, you know. I mean, I was there because I wanted to be, because I loved the guy. In fact, in the last, from the time on, once he got his degree in psychology, he quit being Steve to me. He became Doc. And that's all I called him.
Yeah.
Was Doc. And that and several other ideas.
Yeah.
Well, Steve had a tremendous repertoire of jokes. And, you know, he would roll out those jokes, to fit the occasion. And he had some tremendously dirty jokes. I mean, that guy had, you know, a deep, deep catalog. And, you know,
you're not going to share any of those with us now.
No, some of them were funny.
Yeah.
A lot of them were pretty darn funny. And, yeah, I mean, I think that Steve, you know, Steve was a tough guy. He was also a remarkably funny dude, though. I mean, he had me in stitches, you know, a lot over the years.
You say he was a tough guy. I mean, you knew him. He was a journalist on the air, on the radio, back in a different generation, frankly.
Exactly. I mean, you know, those old AM radio guys, those guys were... I mean, I don't know what the right word is, but they were kind of cowboys. You know, Dan Verbeck, same sort of thing. A very rough and tumble business. You get fired at any time for any reason, and you're getting thrown into situations, difficult situations all the time, just had to deal with it. And so that, you know, that's something that, you know, that's changed a bit. That public radio is not exactly like that, and I think that was one of the things that was great to have about having Steve and Dan here, is that they were just so tough.
Mm-hmm.
Something that had been mentioned, and I think you all can relate to this, Steve had a habit of talking to you when you first met, and he wasn't even in the room yet. He would start talking to you down the hallway, and I noticed that Yellow, you would come down the hallway at Yellow Freight System, make a right, and then make another right into my office. When Steve's coming through the door toward that, he's already talked. He's been in his second sentence, and it kind of reminded me of being at Gates Barbecue because they're saying, "Hi, may I help you?" when you're getting out of your car.
If I may, briefly, one time Matt and I were listening to Steve tell a story, and he was telling it at length. And he
the only way he knew how to tell you.
Well, and so we were both kind of standing there looking at him, kind of looking at each other. Steve edges toward the door of the newsroom, gets to the door of the newsroom, and says, "I'll be right back," and goes to take a leak. So, but as if it were a station break.
These stories are all very believable to people who know Steve. Let's talk to Ruth in Lawrence. Ruth, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I don't know how to put this, but you guys are making me feel really old. I remember AM radio.
It does still exist, yes.
Yeah, but I won't mention call signs, but I used to listen to a lot of those stations in Kansas City. But what I was calling about was I can't match the Yellow Freight guy in terms of how well I knew Steve, but I think I can beat him in how long ago I got acquainted with him. And that was in the fall of 1958 at the University of Kansas. He played the narrator, commentator, I'm not exactly sure how they titled it, in Dylan Thomas's play Under Milkwood, and I was one of the characters in the play. And he made such an impression on me in that role. And, you know, my role was very small, but it was a kind of thing where he was the guy up there front, introducing all of the characters and, you know, giving a little bit of a synopsis. You should read the play sometime if you haven't. I was Mrs. Diebred, too. He just was a great guy, and I kind of have sort of followed his career somewhat. You know, I was very glad when he came back to Kansas City, and, you know.
Ruth,
like
what will you...
Said, I recognize that voice the first time. That's Steve, only at that point he was going, when he was at KU, he was Hank Asbell.
Yeah.
So I'll shut up and let you guys get
Not
back.
At all. Ruth, we're so glad you called. Yeah, thanks so much. You know, want to maybe move toward ending here with some reflection on who he was as a person, too. I mean, we've had a lot of laughs about the things that he said and did, but I want to share something that KCUR's Alex Smith wrote last week. Alex mentioned that long before there was any talk about getting out of our silos at the station, Steve was one of KCUR's great team players. And Alex shares about how he first started writing spots and says he had no idea what he was doing. I ended up working a lot with him and getting his edits became my crash course in writing newscast copy. I remember the first time I was driving in the car and heard Steve Bell and the Steve Bell voice read a spot that I did and thinking, now I'm a real reporter. He also adds that Steve was amazingly consistent and modest, aside from the occasional incident like the time he spent an afternoon wandering around the station casually mentioning that a local female politician told him he had a sexy voice. So there's that. But one last story here, and this is from Michael Byers, our morning drive time announcer. Michael says, "My last conversation with Steve was a few days before he passed. We bumped into each other, and he asked how I was doing. I said, not so great. He said, why not so great? Michael writes, I lost my mother recently and just happened to be going through one of those days that was a little rougher than the others. And when I explained that to him, he said he lost his mother many years before, and it still weighed on him. And then he said, but you know why it hurts so much, don't you? Because you loved her. And then with a smile, he added, and she loved you. Very wise and poignant words indeed." True of my experience of Steve as well.
Yeah, you know, he was a talker, but when he shown his empathy on you, when you got the full dose of Steve Bell empathy, it was like being touched by a holy man or something. It was really astounding when Steve turned and in moments just like that. It's happened to me too.
You can't replace Johnny Carson. You're not going to replace Steve Bell.
Yeah, that's right.
That's Dave Nisley. He, along with Dave Cox and KCR's Frank Morris, friends of Steve Bell. He will very much be missed. Thank you all for being here to be part of this.
It's my pleasure.
I want to mention that Steve's life will be celebrated this Saturday at a memorial service at Country Club United Methodist Church in Kansas City at 2 p.m. Reception will follow. Also, our thanks to Steve's wife, Lenora, for all her help in thinking through today's broadcast. Thanks, finally, to you, our listeners, from all of us here at KCUR. We've received a lot of notes and remembrances and flowers and condolences. We're really grateful for the support that you've shown for us at the passing of our friend Steve. You can find this program online. Recent shows are there, and this one will be later this afternoon. It's at kcur.org/centralstandard. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Be sure you join us tomorrow. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our team includes Suzanne Hogan, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope, and our intern is Anna Sterla. We had special help today from Laura Ziegler. Gina Kaufman's on leave. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll see you tomorrow.